Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Good morning. Happy Sunday.
Morning. Happy Sunday, everyone.
Welcome to the Two Mats regular Q&A episode brought to you by the New European newspaper. First question from Amanda in West Sussex.
Following your discussion about Rishi Sunak fasting as a lifestyle choice, I wanted to bring your attention to a statistic I read in The Guardian. Last year, 800,000 people were admitted to hospital with malnutrition. 800,000. It makes me wonder how many are lacking basic nutrients in their diets, but who maybe aren't quite ill enough to go to a doctor. Very good point. I guess a lot of the implications are obvious to many of us, but not to our fabulously wealthy Prime Minister. Great question. Thank you, Amanda,
thank
from
you.
West Sussex.
More of an observation than a question, isn't it? But
yeah,
I mean, certainly one that elicits a response, which is that isn't that just utterly shameful?
It is.
In this country, in 2024, you know, or these figures from last year, but I don't suppose it's getting any better anytime soon.
I mean, I find them, I would say nauseating, but it seems somehow wrong in the context. But I do. And I actually don't understand, because this is still, depending on what measurement you use, the sixth or seventh richest country in the world. And however straightened the fiscal circumstances are, however big the debt is, there is clearly enough money to do certain things. And one of the things that we should be ensuring, surely, as a basic civilized nation, is that people are not suffering from malnutrition. Mm. I mean, that word that's overused does apply here. Dickensian.
Absolutely outrageous. We're in a terrible position where you've got people queuing up at food banks.
You've got
the stat I read the other day, one in four mothers, new mothers, skipping meals because
they can't afford. Yes.
You brought that up. 28%, I think it was, of new mothers skipping meals.
Skipping meals.
Because they can't afford to feed themselves properly. So let's assume Keir Starmer comes into power. What should he be doing to address this?
Well, I mean, my view is that we have reached the end of the road of what, for want of a better word, people call the neoliberal arrangement, where what you had was a sort of global capitalist system where, as it were, people were compensated. The losers were compensated. I don't use the word losers, but you know what I mean.
You
adjusted the sort of subsidies and fiscal arrangements to people who, through brute luck or ill health or whatever, fell through the shards, and you fell through the slats, and you helped out, and you know, this is called the welfare system or the benefit system. I think that is broken now, and I think that we're in a world now where people who do three jobs, and because one of the spin-offs of the globalization was that wages fell, and so whereas in the 80s, you know, which we talk about a lot, unemployment was the big problem. Unemployment is not the big problem now, it's pay. And, you know, there are some of those mothers you're talking about will be turning two jobs and worrying about childcare all the time.
Yeah.
And I think that we have to, I'm not a big fan of the universal basic income, the idea that the state should pay everyone a flat rate of money. But I think we have to start looking beyond just the sort of universal credit model where some people get a bit of money, some people get more money.
Mm.
There is a deeper crisis here that people are not getting both minimal standards of living.
Yeah.
We're not talking about having two holidays and a car, but having enough to eat. And then beyond that, they're not getting a fair shake. And I keep using those words because I think that is something that has, certainly during my adult life, declined spectacularly.
Yeah.
Which is and I look at the next generation with concern because You know, the idea that if you work hard and you put in a graft, and not, you know, not that you move to London and become a banker, but, you know, just do a job.
Yeah.
You will be okay.
Yeah.
You know, that is gone.
That's not the case at
now,
all.
This is not just alarming. It is terrifying.
Yeah.
Because a society depends on a degree of social cohesion that I think is now almost bust.
Yeah. And one of the areas that concerns me, I mean, as it, of course it concerns me because I'm a human being, is the idea that there are kids going without proper nutrition.
Unbearable.
And one of the things that Islington Council did, which is where I live, is they reintroduced free school meals for primary school
yes.
kids. And I just thought, absolutely right, you know. And the, you know,
and breakfast clubs
and
are great
breakfast
too.
Clubs. I mean, when I was a kid, you got a bottle of milk every
yeah,
play
me
term,
too. Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
And then Margaret Thatcher took it away.
Milk snatcher.
Thatcher, the milk snatcher. But that idea that, you know, we face common problems, and it shouldn't matter when you're a kid whether your parents are earning £100,000 or £30,000 that you can eat properly. You know, it shouldn't matter because it, the effect it has on you as a family, but as an individual growing up, is enormous and light and lasts your whole life. You
yes.
know? So I think any program where it does an equality of nutrition for children.
That's just a basic.
Yeah, come on.
That, you know? And then I think you have to move on to, and you know, if you told me when I was 21 or 23 that I'd be arguing for a wages policy, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you get to the point where people are turning two jobs, three jobs and can't...
Yeah.
Don't have enough to put a roof over their head and food on the table.
Yeah.
Then you do have to ask, the consequences of globalization have been... a vandalized society. It's
yeah.
not just a question of, you know, they've created a group that need to be helped.
Yeah.
No. You know, we're now in a situation where it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's true.
And these are not easy questions. And one of the reasons they're not easy questions is because no one's bloody well willing to ask them.
Yeah.
Because the political paradigm we're in was actually formed in the 1980s.
Yeah.
And at some point, and we've said this before on the podcast, will someone please start the 21st century?
Please, also. You know, there's another aspect to it, which might get me in hot water with some people, but I think there's an education aspect to it, specifically about
yes.
food. I think we eat so much shit in this country.
Absolutely.
I mean, you go into any supermarket, any large supermarket, and there might be 20 aisles of stuff, right? Three of which will be nutritionally positive. You know, the rest of it is shit.
I mean, every child in this country should be taught about nutrition
yeah.
in the same way that they should be taught about how what kind of information to digest.
Yeah, there is, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Schools can't do everything, but they should be very, very mindful. And I'm not. This is not knocking teachers at all. This is a systemic thing of the fact that schools have to be preparing people for citizenship.
Yeah. Yeah, and to look after themselves. You know.
By which I mean, you know, being
yeah,
a
yeah.
you know a contented citizen.
That's right. That's
you know,
right.
Not just someone who's accruing exam results.
Yeah, to better yourself, to be well educated,
to be socially responsible
yeah.
as well as clever.
And
you know,
see improvements in everything: productivity, mental health, physical health, all of
yeah,
those things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know.
And you know, we look at the mental health crisis that is you know is gripping the young, and people claim to be baffled. I'm not baffled by it
no,
at all.
I'm not surprised one bit.
I mean, when you combine the impact of the digital revolution and the withdrawal of life prospects,
yeah,
I'm amazed that they're as flinty as they are.
Yeah, good for them. And I also, just to before we move on to the next question, I remember, because we're very interested in European things in the New European, obviously, and reading a piece about the different level of proportionate spend on food from country to country.
Yeah.
Like Spain, if you're a family in Spain, you spend something like 20 to 25% of your disposable income on food, right? And totally different kinds of food, fresh produce, much more market kind of environment. We spend next to nothing, you know, like 9, 10%
yeah.
of disposable income because we buy all this cheap shit.
Rubbish, processed food. That...
And you think about absolute processed garbage with prices driven down to the bare minimum by these supply chains that the supermarkets
yes.
have insisted on. Farmers going out of business because they're selling milk for less than it costs them to produce. All of this kind of stuff. You know, I do think if you could recalibrate how you lived and you looked at your immediate needs and the want, you know, the primary need being food and housing and warmth, to be able to deliver that to yourself as an individual, that would be a huge step forward for this society.
I'll tell you what Starmer should do is he should commission a new beverage report.
Right, right.
The five ills, you know?
Yeah, that would be...
And the ills wouldn't be the same now.
But maybe we should do that in the New European.
I mean, it's a great... The Nick Timmins book on that is absolutely fantastic. It's a great subject. And I don't hear any of that coming from the Labour side of the House.
Well, we'll pick that up in the New
European. Yeah, let's pick it up.
Food for thought. Next question, please.
Great Trump advert. You read this one out, Matt.
This is from Charles BK1 on Spotify. And by the way, if you want to send in feedback or questions and you're listening on Spotify, you can do that very easily just by tapping into the little dialogue box on Spotify. Great Trump advert. Great Trump advert. You're not losers. I didn't skip for once. Can you do different? And he's talking about the subscription advert that we did in the podcast last week. Can you do different impressions every few weeks? Okay. Can you do? Can you?
I don't know, Sonny. You're talking to Morgan Freeman now. And at the time, I was far from certain that the New European was right for us at Shawshank. What to make of that youngster, Alistair Campbell? But feeling, just for the duration of a podcast, like we were free men. Get busy reading or get busy dying.
Well, I can certainly agree with that, Matt.
Ah, Mr. Connery.
I would say that the New European has been a transformative experience.
Transformative, of course you are.
In my reading habits. And I like to read the New European with, obviously from the grave these days.
From the grave.
But with a Suntory whiskey.
It's interesting. I mean, I'll tell you what, God knows what we've started here. Because
something of not
terrible
very high quality.
It's bringing out the terrible impressions, and I'm not sure it's going to do my profitable future any good. But here's the thing: is that since last week, a lot of people have said, "Oh, do Trump." Yeah. So this is not again. You know, it's like where did how is it in 2024, age 56? I find myself worrying about Trump all the time.
What a loser,
Matt D'Ancona. Used to be a columnist to the Sunday Telegraph, now he works for the European. How does that work? Very sad, very sad.
What a loser.
Very sad.
Right, next question. Thank you for that, Charles BK1 from Spotify.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Ah, good
this
question.
This is a great question, this. And why I'm going to throw it to you.
Okay.
Right, George Hogan, why is the USA supporting Israel?
It's a good question. And it's interesting how rarely it's asked, because it's key to the whole thing, and particularly what's been going on this week. So the proximate answer is that Biden may well be the most pro-Israel president there's ever been. One of his first trips as a senator was to to Israel just before the Yom Kippur War, actually, and he met Golda Meir, and he has been steadfast as a friend of Israel ever since. You know, he's always been at the center of foreign policy. So there's that personal thing. It was predictable that after October 7th, Biden would be straight out the trap saying, up with this, I will not put. So that's Biden. But there's a much longer tradition of America having a strong bond with Israel. Not, it has to be said, not always even. Little realized fact, probably the least pro-Israel president was Reagan, who was very skeptical about a lot of things that were going on, and, you know, took time to chastise Israel a lot more than you might think.
Right.
Why is it so important to America? Well, I mean, then you're going back to, I mean, first of all, the foundation. Obviously, America, a democracy, was always going to support a democracy formed after the war and the Holocaust in the Middle East. That was always true. But then you get into realpolitik. And in the Cold War, Israel was, you know, a kind of way station for American strategy in the region that, as time passed, became more and more important for oil, as well as the fight with the Soviet Union. So that, you know, even post the end of the Soviet Union, the end of the Cold War, that has survived. And you've seen Antony Blinken, the US Secretary of State, engaged in, you know, relentless, sleepless shuttle diplomacy between the representatives of Hamas and the Israeli government, and he is bitterly disappointed that Netanyahu, the Irish Israeli Prime Minister, turned down the peace proposal. That
did so very bluntly, didn't he?
I was actually quite surprised by how absolutely he turned it down.
Do you know what I mean? The weird thing is, because he's not in a strong position, but it felt like a guy who held all the cards, and he doesn't hold all the cards.
No, I mean, I think one of the reasons he turned it down, you know, one can get into the whole thing about what's the future of Hamas under such an arrangement, but I mean, the key thing to think about Netanyahu is that the minute there's anything like a sort of ending or even pause of any duration in this, Netanyahu's toast.
Yeah.
So, right. But just to finish off, I think that it's interesting because this generation of American politicians, are about 150, do support Israel. But look at what's happening on American campuses. You know, the support for the Palestinian cause is rock solid. And these, you know, in the Ivy League schools, these are the leaders of tomorrow. You know, you can't just dismiss them as woke idiots, as a lot of people do.
They're kids who don't count.
You know,
or whatever,
they, you know, they've grown. And this is, I think, very important to understanding what's going on, is that they haven't seen Israeli statesmen like Rabin and Peres and Barak. They've grown up with Netanyahu.
Yeah.
They've grown up with Israeli Trump as the face of Israel.
Yeah.
So they have very little
kind
of sense of kinship and sympathy.
Interesting.
And so I don't know, but if we were having this conversation 30 years from now, maybe fewer years, I wonder whether America will be quite as... But it's so taken for granted, isn't it?
Yeah. No, you're
there's,
right.
There's a bond.
That's why, thank you, George Hogan, again. It's why it's such a brilliant question.
But it's
the best
not,
questions are the most cutting. Why do they support them?
None of these relationships are written in stone.
No.
And if you look at the way that American foreign policy is going, which is undoubtedly towards a sort of America first isolationism, that's bad news for Ukraine, but it's probably also strategically bad news for Israel, because Israel supporting Israel takes up a lot of bandwidth.
But can you imagine an Israel without American support?
Well, I mean, yes, I can. And I think that it would be worse for it, oddly enough, because I think that they would still... There is no doubt that at various points in since the foundation of Israel, the staying hand of the US on Israel has stopped things from being worse than they could have. And, you know, Clinton was awesome in his attempt to bring peace to the region, which sadly didn't work out. But I just don't, you know, this is causing Biden all sorts of electoral problems in a year that he could do without it. And I just wonder whether subsequent presidents and, you know, the people who run against them will want to be spending as
marginalize it a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think the direction of travel, not just with Israel, but in America generally, is away from the post-war role of being the global policeman.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you again, George. Great question. Next question, please.
I was surprised you wasted so much time on your latest pod slagging off Lawrence Fox. He is very obviously suffering from cannabis psychosis. Would it not be better to be sympathetic to his evident mental health problem rather than poking fun at him? From Martin.
Well, I mean, I don't know if he's... I don't know whether Lawrence... Does Lawrence Fox... Is he public about smoking weed?
I think he's talked about CBD, but
I don't know whether he's suffering from a cannabis psychosis.
Certainly wouldn't
not.
Diagnose it. I mean,
what I do know is that he is present on our airwaves and present in our social media and is garnering support, which I find troubling and offensive, and that's got to be dealt with, whatever he's suffering from.
And I think that, you know, there's a lesson from the world of addiction, if indeed he is suffering from addiction, and I hope he isn't, that it can be an explanation, but it's never an excuse.
Right.
And so I don't think that, with respect to Martin, it's a good question to raise, that, you know, if indeed he is suffering from this, and I haven't heard that before, but as a thought experiment, say he is, that doesn't acquit him from, you know, reasonable judgment upon his public utterances. Yeah. And actually, as we, you know, the thing we really wanted to get into in that section last week was about who's funding him.
That's right. In fact, we were at pains
more about him.
It's not really about Lawrence Fox.
Yeah, exactly.
It was about the sort of dark money around him. I mean, Martin, thank you for your question. And certainly, I hope this demonstrates we are...
We are not
fearful of critique. So anybody else
not
who disagrees
at all.
No, weigh in.
Absolutely.
But you're right about... You do trigger a little bit of concern about how casually we do talk about people having... You know, I've done it. So we said, you know, he's obviously having a chronic breakdown and stuff like this. And maybe he is having a chronic breakdown.
It's extremely hard to know. I mean, you know, one of the things that's been good about the greater transparency around mental health in the last couple of decades has been that, you know, the prevalence of mental health issues has become much clearer. I think, you know, the idea that it was a tiny proportion of the population that suffered is not true at all.
No.
And it's good that people and, you know, prominent people in public life have come forward and said, actually, you know, I have suffered that. I know it's great.
Yeah.
We only say it as we see it. And we weren't aware, if indeed this is the case, that was the case. So, you know.
Well, okay. Thank you, Martin. Let's move on to the next question. Larry from Coventry asks,
this is fascinating.
Is this a real
question? The content of the question is more interesting than the answer, actually.
I'm too cowardly to confront Scouse Terrace legend Matt Killer Kelly directly.
He obviously knows you.
I'll ask Matt the Diplomat Dancona to adjudicate. Is it Sieg or Segway?
Well, first of all, I'm charmed to be called a diplomat.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure
Killer
I am.
Kelly, has he been Googling me?
I think he must have been, yeah. or talking to people who know you or work for you.
Yeah.
So a bit of swift research reveals that it is Segway.
Is it? I always say Sieg, yeah. Okay.
I mean, I don't know about you, I'm not a pronunciation Nazi. I think...
No.
But I mean, you know, Google pronunciation is and it says very firmly that it's Segway. And I think this is because it comes from Italian, Segway.
So, I was once on the... when Simon Mayo did a show on Radio 5 Live, it was like a two-hour afternoon show, and I was on there as a guest and used to love doing it. You could talk, you know, and I would talk about all sorts of things. And we came onto a conversation. I can't even remember what it was about, but I used the word triumvirate, except I said triumvirate, right? And Simon Mayo said... What did, sorry, let's just pause there. What did you say? Triumvirate? What's that?
It's perfectly clear what you mean, you see.
And I shot back, I said, how do you know how the bloody Romans pronounced things?
Yeah, what have the Romans ever done for your pronunciation,
exactly,
Mayo?
Anyway, so
no, I'm a very relaxed, I'm libertarian on pronunciation because I think it gets people, it's people can get, I mean, it's a perfectly good question from Larry about Segway, but people can get terribly snooty about pronunciation, as if it.
Well, you'll notice that you haven't heard much of Simon Mayo ever since he took the piss out of me, which may be where I got my Killer Kelly.
I gather that he's in a bad way.
He's not. He's sucking soup through a straw. Let's put it like that.
This is slightly against what we just said about Lawrence Fox, but I gather Simon Mayo's living on the embankment with a dog on a string.
He is, mate. He is.
And a harmonica.
He is. It's the last time he'll take the piss out of my pronunciation. That's all I'll say.
That's the killer for you.
Thanks, Larry. No need to be fearful.
No, I'm not sure.
We're all cheerful here.
How sure are you?
And that's it. Larry, you had the honour of being the last questioner.
Yeah.
Thank you, as ever,
to
our production team at Rethink Audio, led this week by Ollie Peart.
Thank you.
Don't forget your subscription offer and your free Bollocks to Brexit passport cover. And until next Friday...
Have a great Sunday.
Have a terrific Sunday.
See you soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.